Anarcho Book Club.
So today, we're going to be finishing up Debt, the first 5,000 years. But first, I just want to say, sorry for the delay in publishing this or posting this. Excuse me. But I've had to do a lot of work recently at my day job. I wish I could do this full time, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. So, or ever, actually, for that matter. But, yeah, so there's my excuse. Let's dive into the last half of this book, Debt, the First 5,000 Years by David Graeber. If you don't have a copy yet and you want to stop this and follow along, well, there won't be much following today, actually. I'm just going to be kind of throwing out some thoughts. I had taken notes, but I lost them. I wrote them down on a piece of paper and cleaned recently and must have thrown the paper away. But I did find a review by someone on Taylor Pearson, which I don't really know what this... It's an educational site, I guess. But some of these... Some of these notes kind of highlight what I wanted to talk about anyway. So, let's just get into it then. Let's see. Gotta find the right... Oh, yeah. Graeber, we talked about coinage and who controls the debt and who controls coinage and all that. He goes into it more later, but again, you should read the book. It's really just packed full of information that I think everyone should know. But he also talks about the idea of turning honor into money, but not being able to convert that honor back into... not being able to convert money into honor. So you can't buy honor. Honor is only earned by actually performing some sort of a task. If you think King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, if you've read Sir Thomas Malory, Sir Thomas Malory, is that his name? Sir Thomas Malory, yeah. If you've read his Le Mot d'Arthur, then you know that there are different ways of earning honor, or the Song of Roland, a French tale about earning honor by killing Arabs, interestingly, which is very relevant to today's day and age. You earn honor in the American Empire by going over and killing brown people, and good on you for that. Bravo. You've done a good job securing America by killing people in other countries, but I digress, because we're talking about debt. And money and coinage. All the most fun things in the world. So he goes on. Let me just read a little paragraph. I believe these are actually quotes because some of they look very familiar. Whereas Persian and Arab thinkers assumed that the market emerged as an extension of mutual aid, Christians never completely overcame the suspicion that commerce was really an extension of usury, a form of fraud. Only truly legitimate when directed against one's mortal enemies. Debt was indeed a sin on the part of both parties to the transaction. Competition was essential to the nature of the market, but competition was usually nonviolent warfare. And it is important, he says, since it lies at the very heart of our image of the Middle Ages. And the explanation, I think, is revealing. We have to recall that merchants had begun to achieve unprecedented social and even political power around this time, but that, in dramatic contrast to Islam, where a figure like Sindbad, the successful merchant adventurer, could serve as a fictional exemplar of the perfect life. Merchants, unlike warriors, were never seen as paragons of much of anything. So, it was the warrior, then, that was the seeker, the one who earned honor. And much as it is today, I think, at least in U.S. politics, even though John McCain was a murderous little man, he was given much respect by both the Democrats and the Republicans. And though and we idolize all of our presidents, except for maybe the most recent, but even I think even though he is seen now as a clown, I think probably within a few more terms of other presidents, he may not be seen as quite a horrible little man. Because he has done some things. Like, for instance, he has killed a lot fewer brown people in the Middle East than our last, what, four presidents? And he's made it a point to stop killing people for no reason. He doesn't see any point in it. I don't see any point in it. I'm not really a defender of his, but if he ever does live up to his promise of withdrawing troops from the Middle East, that would be amazing, I think. So, here, let me get a drink. So, you can earn honor through great deeds in Christendom. Whereas the Persians saw it another way. You earned honor, well, maybe not even honor, but you earned prestige through shrewd trade, through commerce. But in the end, let's see. Here it is. The very idea that human beings are motivated primarily by self-interest, then, was rooted in the profoundly Christian assumption that we are all incorrigible sinners. Left to our own devices, we will not simply pursue a certain level of comfort and happiness and then stop to enjoy it. We will never cash in the chips like Sinbad, let alone question why we need to buy chips to begin with. And here, the summarizer has put all this in bold, so I think we will read it as well. There is, and always has been, a curious affinity between wage labor and slavery. This is not just because it was slaves on Caribbean sugar plantations who supplied the quick energy products that powered much of early wage labor's work. Not just because of the scientific management techniques applied in factories in the Industrial Revolution can be traced back to those sugar plantations, but also because both the relation between the master and slave and between the employer and employee are in principle impersonal. Whether you've been sold or you're simply rented yourself, or you've simply rented yourself out. I have a feeling that the person who summarized this typed all this up him or herself, because there are a lot of errors. Or you've simply rented yourself out, the moment money changes hands, you are supposed to be unimportant. All that's important is that you are capable of understanding orders and doing what you're told. Man, that resonates. Yes, that does need to be in bold. That resonates a great deal with me. Yeah, it does. Because, for instance, like I said in the beginning of this podcast, I've been working. I haven't had enough days off where I didn't have something else to do to maintain my life and the life of my wife and our dogs. That I haven't had enough time to sit down and record this. And it's true. I have rented myself out to my employer, and it is impersonal, no matter how personal my bosses seem to attempt to make our relationship. In the end, they care about the bottom line, and okay, that is the construct within which they operate, and it is the construct within which I have chosen to operate. I could refuse it all. But I would not live in a house if I refused it all. Maybe I would eventually, but not at this age, not at my age. It would be a long time before I lived in a house. I would not have decent clothes. I'm not rich, but I have some clothes that are nice. Or at least not ratty. Although if you ask my wife, she would say otherwise. You could reject it all, I think. But still you'd still work within the system. You still live, if you live in the United States, you still live on land that is not yours, no matter how much you paid for that land. I'm getting ahead of myself because that's coming up next. Don't take out loans. That is the note for this next section. And I will read what Graeber says. Debt peonage continues to be the main principle of recruiting labor globally, either in the literal sense in much of East Asia and Latin America, or in the subjective sense, whereby most of those working for wages or even salaries feel that they are doing so primarily to pay off interest-bearing loans. All right. So now we're to it. The note says, do not take out loans. That is the person summarizing this. And that is what I got from it as well. The whole chapter in which that paragraph resides, I took from that. I've always thought loans aren't the greatest thing in the world to have. You really shouldn't try. You should try not to take loans. But until I read this, I never really understood how deep it runs. Because it's not just loans. So think about it this way. And this is something that I remember thinking about whenever I read it. You own, say, okay, so, no, let's do it this way. I own my house, so to speak. I don't own my house, however. So I still owe the bank money for my house. They could at any time call that money in. Now, there are rules in place. There are, you know, protections and so on. But if something happens to my job, they could call in those loans and say, hey, you owe us this much. You need to pay us up. And I could say, well, I don't have a job. Okay, so you have to have a job. You have to operate within the system. And that's why I said earlier, I wouldn't have this home if I didn't operate within the system. I'm not trying to excuse the idea of operating within the system, the construct that has been constructed for us. I'm just saying that I would not have the comforts of life that I have had I not taken out a loan and gotten a decent job. Well, in my world, this is a good job. I've never been paid so much in my life. However, I've never worked so much in my life either. So, and with all that said, I'm still lower middle class, believe it or not, with all that work. So, we have... So don't take out loans, because you immediately... So whereas if you are employed by someone, you are only their slave, you've rented your services and your person out to them for the time that they agreed to. As soon as you take a loan out, you are now someone else's property, essentially. Essentially, you are. Essentially, they can take anything they want from you if you fail to hold up your end of the loan agreement. And so that's where you learn that loans, like the real deeper part of loans, it's if you really think about what a loan is, let's put it this way. If you really think about what a loan is saying, I promise to pay you this much money or you can take everything to help pay it. To help pay it back, to help pay off the debt that I owe you. And therefore, you are in debt to the loan company or the bank or whatever they are. And so, but he moves on and it gets deeper than that. let's read this little paragraph here. The new dispensation. Wages would no longer rise, but workers were encouraged to buy a piece of capitalism rather than euthanize the rentier. Everyone could now become rentier, effectively could grab a chunk of the profits created by their own increasingly dramatic rates of exploitation. The means were many and familiar. In the United States, there were 401k retirement accounts and an endless variety of other ways encouraging ordinary citizens to play the market, but at the same time encouraging them to borrow. And this is where we're getting to. So you can take out a loan for your house. Sure, that's a simple sort of debt. Debt slavery, debt, whatever you want to call it. Simple form. It gets a lot deeper, though, because now you have a job to upkeep your home, or you have a job just so that you can rent a place from someone, which I'm not entirely certain isn't the smarter bet. But now your job says, hey, so we'll give you 1%. That's what my job gives me. So we're going to give you 1% of your wages again and put it into a 401k for you. Now, I said, no, I don't want that. I'd rather invest myself. But I didn't escape the problem here by doing that. So they encourage you to start a retirement account. That retirement account invests in places like Walmart. Now, follow along with me. Walmart, now you're investing your money and giving it to Walmart in hopes of them giving you more back eventually. Effectively, you're giving them a loan, so to speak. It's not really a loan because the terms are different, but because you could actually lose all of that money, whereas with loan, it gets complicated if we go too far into that side of it. So you're giving them money, an investment, and that helped you and a million other people are doing this. And say you're only giving $7 a month or so, about a month. $7 a month you're giving to them. And a million other people are doing it. Now they got $7 million. Well, that's a great way. So now what are they going to do with that? Well, more recently it has become more common to do this, but years back, they said, how about we have a chain of banks in all of our stores? And then we can give people credit cards. Not just any credit card, but a Walmart credit card. We're going to give you a Walmart credit card. How about that? And now, every time you buy something, it doesn't have to be at Walmart. Every time you buy something, you get some points. Those points, you can spend those points at Walmart. Oh, how great that is. And actually, all things considered, it isn't bad. It's a good idea, I guess. But if you really scrutinize it, why are they doing that? Obviously some people aren't going to pay. But the scheme goes different or deeper than that. Some people aren't going to pay their debts, and then they get to take interest from them. That's great. That's the old way of doing things. That's a really great way to make money. Because you can just tell people, here, have some money for free. Oh, you can't pay. Okay, we're going to take more of your money now. And, okay, so that's great. But it's worse. It's deeper. Hold on, let me get a drink. It gets a lot deeper than that. So, now they reinvest that. They say, okay, now come and spend these points here. Well, you're going to go grocery shopping anyway. Oh, look. You got all your groceries, but you have all this money and points on your credit card. How about, you might as well treat yourself, right? So, why don't you get that candy bar? Yeah, you know what? You got lots of points. How about you get a whole box of candy bars? Oh, but guess what? If you get a box of candy bars, you can get another box for half off. So now you bought two boxes of candy bars you weren't going to buy. So now they've looped you in. Now you've bought something extra, and you spent the points plus some. They're getting a little extra money out of the deal. And that's how sales work. It's always been this way. That's how sales work. But they've captured the entire loop, so to speak. Used to, You'd have credit agencies, credit cards, and so on. Or just, you know, and they were separate. And now it's all together. Now they control the entire loop from you work at Walmart, if you work there. Say you work at Walmart, you have your credit card and bank through Walmart. They control all of your funds. I mean, you do have control over your own money, but in the end, your money's residing within their vault, and your debt resides with them. And if it's your bank, and you don't shop around like most Americans don't do, you don't shop around for the best loan, you're going to get your home loan through them, and everything you do will be through Walmart, all centralized, and you get your points from Walmart, you buy all your groceries from Walmart, you buy everything there. So that's one form. They close the loop. They've made you a slave. Whether you know it or not, psychologically, you have become a slave to that corporation. Now, there's another way this happens. Let's see. Another way this... let's just use an example. My wife and I would go to the mall. And we go to American Eagle. Yeah, that I know she likes blue jeans there. So we go to American Eagle. She gets a pair of jeans. No, she gets three. Now, what they could do... so they have a credit card. I'm almost 100% sure they do. And so she gets these three pairs of jeans. She just wants to pay for them, and we just want to leave. Then she can have real comfortable jeans that she can wear. It's going to be great. We get up to the register. Oh, are you a member? No. Would you like to save 20% today by applying for our credit card? No. Really? You don't want to save 20%? Those are expensive jeans. Okay, well, no. Okay, that's fine. You can still accumulate points if you sign up for our American Eagle whatever card. And it's not a credit card. It's just a membership card. You're going to become a member of our exclusive little club here. Oh, okay. What do I have to give you? You have a phone number. Okay, yeah. Give out your phone number. Do you have... we'll need your email address as well. I don't really want to give out my email address. Well, you have to if you want this discount. And she gives me an email address. What's your first and last name? And where do you live? And so on and so on. You all have probably seen it 100 billion times. And... this is, I know it sounds extreme to call this a form of looping you into it like a debt slavery situation, but it is very similar. It's the same scheme, the same marketing ploy, so to speak, where they, if they have your information, they can be assured that you come back to them. Oh, and by the way, it gets better. Now, you're going to sign up for this thing. Oh, it's $100 a year, or $50, or whatever it is a year. You have to pay every year for the... you have to pay for the privilege of them having your information, which they're going to sell, and you eventually become a slave to the system one way or another. You're going to become a slave one way or another. So don't take out loans. Don't sign up for stuff that you don't need. Like, don't sign up for all these... deal type things through every company. It's just a way of giving out your identity, and for them to sell your identity to advertisers, for advertisers to market to you, which some people say they like. Okay, that's fine. You're part of the matrix, man, so they say. But don't do it. Just don't do it. That's the reason why I use free software, in fact. Everything I do is on free software. Because I know if I was using Windows, they capture everything you do on your computer. And, well, basically, I mean, it's not everything, but they capture everything and they know everything you're doing. It's the reason why I don't use Google Docs, because you become part of their system, part of their scheme, their whole ecosystem. Use Google Docs. If you read their terms of service, whatever you upload to Google Drive and Google Docs, you don't technically own it anymore as soon as it's uploaded. So, say I upload. Oh, yeah. So say I uploaded this podcast. I don't know if I could, but just say I did. I no longer own it at that point. Now, I'm sure it's fine. I would still basically own it. But they have a claim on it. And another thing. So all these little schemes, it's all part of a... It's not. I'm not trying to make a connection like, oh, this is a great conspiracy or whatever. But it's all part of the debt capital bubble. The big loop. It's all about who can... In the end, who controls the loop? Well, in the world... Now, my European friends, you may think that you're free of this because, oh, we're in Europe. We're in the EU. We're not part of the US. I'm sorry to tell you that you're wrong. Your entire currency, and this would be a topic that would go way too... I mean, we'd be doing this for hours if I tried to get into that. Your entire currency is built on the US dollar. If the US dollar falls, every currency in the world falls with it. If it collapses, every currency in the world is finished. Everything that you measure value with is gone. And the ramifications of that are catastrophic. So, but we've looped, the United States Empire has looped the entire world in on this grand Ponzi scheme. Because that's what it is. It's a big pyramid scheme. Big old Ponzi scheme. And it's all based on debt. It's all based on debt. Everything we do is debt-based. That new iPhone, that is debt-based. You know why it's so cheap, although it's not really that cheap anymore? So cheap because Apple doesn't pay for it. They don't pay for that. You think they're paying for that up front? No. They're not paying for that up front. They don't. The people they're paying for those units, every unit, they pay a fraction of what they ought to. The rest is debt. Debt that they never intend to repay because they don't have to. The people in China, the people in Europe, the people in all of Asia, the people in Australia, the people in Africa, they all subsidize the U.S. lifestyle, the U.S. empire, that is. And that empire, it grows every day. It grows... Just think about it. The people, the last three, wait, one, two, three or four presidents, let me think. One, two, three. Yeah, the last four presidents have killed more people in the Middle East and in other parts of the world, in Africa, Middle East, than Hitler could have ever imagined killing. Just look it up. Look up the numbers. How many brown people... Well, you don't want to type that in, but how many people did Bush kill? How many people did Obama kill? Millions of people. And for what? Was it for oil? Well, sure. That was a good byproduct that we got. No, but it was for control. It was for control because you have to maintain control of the currency. You have to maintain control of debt. You have to maintain control of the world if you want your empire to stand. But I'm telling you, it's all a house of cards. It doesn't take much. It takes a breath of air to knock over this house of cards. Maybe less. And my European brethren and my African friends and my Australian and New Zealand friends, there's... There are breaths all the time coming towards the House of Cards. Sometimes they don't reach it. Sometimes it shudders. Like in 2008, the House of Cards, maybe a few cards fell, but you know what? By golly, those crafty men and women in the government, they were able to put it all back together. You know how? Oh, that's right. A lot of things. We pumped how many trillions of fake dollars into the U.S. economy and into the world. We started a war in Syria that dropped almost I think almost 27,000 bombs on that tiny little country. And for what? For nothing. It was to remain in power, to remain in control. We dropped bombs on Yemen every day. We dropped bombs in Iraq and Iran. Unofficially in Iran. We dropped bombs all the time. We'll just put it this way. We're blowing shit up. And why? It's to remain in power and control. It is to buy honor, or to get money through honor. You purchase monetary wealth through honor. And what? Now, see, there's a good little twist. The lexicographer's dilemma, so to speak. What is honor? Well, it depends on who you ask. What is money? Well, it depends on who you ask. So, it's all enforced, and it always has been. That's the fun part about this. It always has been enforced with force. Taxation? Well, taxation is theft. But it's not as bad as the debt that they say we owe them. I'm going to just tell you one more little story before I start getting to the end of this. One more little story that I learned reading, who was it? Murray Rothbard in his book series called Conceived in Liberty. I haven't read the last one. There's 5 parts of it, but I think it was in the second part. It might have been the first part of it. He told the story about the Quakers, how they founded Pennsylvania. Well, U.S. history, excuse me, took a drink. In the U.S. history books, it says, well, William Penn, he came over and he founded Pennsylvania for the Quaker people. But in reality, he came after the Quakers were already there. Now, they accepted him. The Quakers are known as the Friends. That is how they call themselves. If you ever see a Quaker church out, you won't see it say the Quaker church or whatever it is. It will say the Friends of whateverville, whatever town it's in. The Friends of this. They are pacifists. They are generally nonviolent. They believe in minimalism. They don't believe in consuming more than they need. No one's going out buying more pairs of shoes than they need. No one's going out spending money like it's going out of style. But most of all, whenever they were first settling Pennsylvania, it was well before the idea of a United States was ever conceived of. Whenever they moved out there, it was to get away from the oppression of England. And they moved out, and they homesteaded pieces of land. They created communities where they helped each other. It was called mutual aid. Now, they didn't come up with this idea, I don't think. Maybe they did, but I don't think they did. But they embodied a lot of what Graeber talks about here in this book. They lived their lives for a while until finally one day the king passes down an order to William Penn and says, hey, listen, we need you to start collecting quit rents. Quit rents. What is a quit rent? A quit rent is very similar, if not exactly the same, as a property tax. Well, he sent out his tax collectors to collect quit rents. And I can imagine it going a little like this. Tax collector walks up, says, excuse me, sir. Ma'am, You owe William Penn and the King 15 shillings. And the good Sir Quaker says, "Excuse me, why do I owe him 15 shillings?" He says, "Well, you're on his land, see?" "Oh, no, no, I'm not. I'm not on his land. This is my land. I came out here and I homesteaded this land myself. This is not any part of the king's business." "Well, now listen here, sir. You have to pay him 15 shillings. Come on now, out with it. I don't even have the king's money. How can I give him something that's not his?" "Well, you do have shillings, don't you?" "Well, of course I do, but they don't have his face on them." "Well, those will do anyway. Come on now. Give me 15 shillings, and we'll be on our way." "Well, what are you going to do if I don't?" says the Quaker. Well, you don't want to feel the wrath of the king, see?" He goes, oh, no, I don't, but, I have to say, this is my land, and you need to get off of it right now." And now remember, the Quakers are pacifists. They won't raise a hand against another man or woman. But they also refused, through peacefully, I might add, they refused to pay the king what he demanded. King said, "That's my land, and you owe me rent for it. You are a debtor to me. You are my debtor," he says to them. And that's exactly what our governments say to us. That's what the U.S. government says to all governments and all people. "You are my debtor," says the U.S. empire. Come on now, hand over your money. And most people, if not all, say, "Okay, here you go, just leave me be." Some people say no. You know, some people, like right now, in this day and age, in the year 2020, we have the Iranian prime minister saying, "Listen, buddy," to Trump, "we're not going to put up with you anymore. We're not going to put up with your bullying. Your predecessor bullied us. His predecessor bullied us. Everybody tries to bully us. And we're done with it. We're not doing it anymore." And what does Trump do? He kills a military leader, I think it was for Syria at the time, but it was on their land, and that was the point. It was in Iran. Has him killed in Iran. He's showing them that he can do anything he wants, because he is the emperor, so to speak. He is the emperor of the world. And, of course, the generals are all about this, because if this gins up another war, well, there's a lot of money to be made off of war, you see. So that's what we're left with. This is why I'm an anarchist. This isn't the only reason why, but this is one of the reasons, because so far from what I've seen, well, the government can only get things one way. They can only get things through force. They use force for everything. Do you want new roads? Okay, pay up. Pay those taxes. You gotta pay those taxes. Well, I'm not paying your taxes. Oh, you're not gonna pay my taxes, are you? Well, here, how about a gun to the head? Now you gonna pay them? No, sir, I'm not. All right. We're gonna haul you off to jail. And if you fight back, bang, you're dead. So, they use the threat of force, the threat of violence, the threat of death, the threat of putting your family in prison or killing them to get what they want. That is the foundation. They have to use force to get anything. That is the foundation of why I became an anarchist. Why I try my hardest to live it. Although at this point in my life, there are certain things that I just have to give in to. I wish it weren't so. But there are certain things I have to give into, like paying my taxes. I'd rather not go to jail. I'd rather not get in a gunfight with a cop. I'd rather not do a lot of things. And right now, at this moment, it benefits me more to pay these extortion fees in order to live a life and record this podcast and do what I do. It's worth more to me to do that than to try to resist. Also, I'm pretty sure my wife would kill me first before the government got their hands on me. So, I'm just saying. So, they have to do everything through force. Eventually, the Quakers gave in. So, just so you know. Quakers gave in. Pennsylvania became an official colony. And that was the end of anarchy in the U.S. I mean, there were anarchists. They came through from France and other countries. But that was the end of an actual stand against an authority. That was the end of a stand against someone imposing their will through force on another human being. But, and it's all done, as Graeber points out, through debt, the implications of debt, through the control of money, through control. And I'll leave you with this. It's the last paragraph of this summary, but also I think it's very important for the understanding of this book. Ultimately, and this is what it says, ultimately it's sociality itself that that's treated as abuse. Ultimately, it's sociality itself that's treated as abuse, criminal, demonic. To this, most ordinary Americans, including Black and Latino Americans, recent immigrants, and others who were formerly excluded from credit, have responded with a stubborn insistence on continuing to love one another. They continue to acquire houses for their families, liquor and sound systems for parties, gifts for friends. They even insist on continuing to hold weddings and funerals, regardless of whether this is likely to send them skirting default or bankruptcy, apparently figuring that as long as everyone now has to remake themselves as a miniature capitalist, why shouldn't they be allowed to create money out of nothing too? And there's the rub. Because the ones that are actually doing the creation of money, the Fed, the U.S. Treasury, they get away with it. You and I try to do that, we can go to jail. I mean, or worse. So I guess the moral of this book to me, now you may have read this and got something completely different, and I'd love to hear from you if you did. But to me, the moral of this book was that debt is a primary instance in life that will keep you from being free. Debt is an instrument of the state to hold everyone else down. In the example of the U.S. Empire, they hold all the other countries down. In the example of banks, they hold their debtors down. They keep them under their thumb. They collect rents. The government collects quit rents and rents from their debtors. And those debtors are you and me, usually, unless you're a banker, or unless you're a government official. In that case, I don't know if I want to talk like that on this podcast. So I'm trying to keep it clean. So that's going to be it for this book. I hope you enjoyed the book. If you're not finished reading it, please read it. We are going to be, let me see. I've already forgotten what the next book is going to be. Would have been helpful if I had written it down. Oh, that's right. I remember. Our next book is a book by, Samuel Edward Konkin III. I mentioned Agorist earlier, I think. I think it's time to delve into the world of counter-economics. And they sometimes are classified as capitalists, but in my experience, there haven't been very many that I've met, because I've met quite a few agorists. And most of them are not what you'd think of as a capitalist. They generally believe in mutual aid. So we're going to be reading his book. Let's see. Oh, great. What's... I always forget the name of it, and it's an easy name to remember. Great. Where is it? I've got it right here. Ah! Oh, of course. Okay, it's really easy to remember, actually. Agorist Class Theory. So, it's a class theory book. It's kind of fun. It's a little bit, it's easy to read, and it's not very long. It's actually really short, but it's really interesting, and I'm proud to announce that I have gone through all they had on agorism.info, which is the website that is kind of, the hub for all things agorist. All they really had was a PDF, which I hate PDFs. I can't read them on anything. So, I am proud to announce that I have transformed this book into an EPUB. Not just a quick little transform with, like, Calibre or anything. Although I did use Calibre for the editing. And I also edited the book, so it's organized better. So, this will be the first book that Anarcho Book Club puts out as an actual published item. And so I hope you guys enjoy. If you find any errors that I made, please feel free to tell me. You can find it on the website, which is anarchobook.club. And I will be seeing you guys hopefully within the next week or two. I hope I can get to it again next week, but there's no promises with how my work's been going. So it's been great. And thanks for listening.